Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to By Yahweh's Design with your guest host, Pastor Eli James.
Thank you, Cherise. Pastor Eli James here, and our guest this evening is Pastor James Warner of the Christian Defense League. Are you with us, James?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much. Before we get into the program, I just have a couple of announcements that this Thursday on The Voice of Christian Israel, I will be doing a solo program on obviously a Christian identity theme. And then this Sunday on Judgment Day Perspectives Radio, my guest will be John W. Gerhardt, and we're going to be talking about America's prison system and how white prisoners are being oppressed within our prison system. And I also want to announce real quickly that my internet messenger service is up and working, so anybody who has any questions for me or Pastor James Warner, you can email me at elijosephjames2012@yahoo.com. Again, that's elijosephjames2012@yahoo.com. And also, Cherise will be monitoring the email at Pastor Dan's office there, and that's BYD Pastor Dan, which is the instant messenger, Yahoo Instant Messenger, and bydpastordan@yahoo.com, I believe, is the email address there. So looking forward to questions and comments. The verses I have chosen for today's sermon are Psalm 64 from the Old Testament and Matthew 5, verses 10 through 16. First, Psalm 64. Hear my voice, O God, in my prayer. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity, who whet their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They commune of laying snares privily. They say, who shall see them? Of course, he's talking about Edomite Jews here, ladies and gentlemen. Verse 6, they search out iniquities. They accomplish a diligent search. Both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly shall they be wounded. So they shall make their own tongue to fall upon themselves. All that see them shall flee away, and all men shall fear, and shall declare the work of God, for they shall wisely consider his doing. Verse 10, the righteous shall be glad in Yahweh, and shall trust in him, and all the upright in heart shall glory. And we're waiting for that day when all the upright in heart will have God's government back established here on this planet. Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 16. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when man shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Of course, that the salt that has lost its savor describes the Christian churches today. Verse 14, ye are the light of this world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Pastor James Warner,
yes.
Isn't that what you've been doing with the Christian Defense League and your publishing operations, is letting the light of the gospel shine?
Well, we try to reach as many people as possible. We've mailed out millions and millions of papers free over the last 40 years, trying to reach mm-hmm. people, and I think we've got quite a few people in and out, and one of the big problems we have is that people, once they get involved, they they sort of get into everything, and then if they would stick with one organization or two organizations, they'd be fine. But they want to join 30 or 40 organizations, and that just disrupts the whole thing.
Well, yeah, a lot of us in Christian Identity spread ourselves a little too thin. There's no doubt about
that. They sure do. Yeah, that's the big problem we're having. You can't build a real strong organization like Dr. Swift had.
Right, right. Now, is your organization, the Christian Defense League, is it an offshoot of Dr. Swift's legacy, or is there a relationship there or not?
Well, Christian Defense League was formed a long time ago. It was formed in 1931 or 32 by Princess Caragia of Romania.
By who?
Switzerland. Princess Caragia.
Caragia.
K-R-A-D-J-A.
Okay.
She was a great patriot that went and testified for the protocols in 1935.
Oh, wow.
In the Bern, Switzerland meeting, and she was one of the founders of the original Christian Defense League.
Interesting. I've never heard of that. That's a very interesting story. You should write that up for us.
Well, I've had documents by her and articles. She formed a number of organizations and was very, very active. I think her father was at one time the Romanian ambassador to Germany at one time in Berlin.
Okay. Oh, well, now for the listeners who aren't familiar with your organization, why don't you tell us about how you came to be the director of the group and, how you got involved in Christian Identity?
Well, I got involved in Christian Identity through Dr. Swift.
Okay.
And I used to go up to his meetings in Hollywood at the Women's Club. There was used to be a patriotic organization called the Women's Club of America before everything was subverted by the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Swift was very lucky to be able to speak at the Women's Club in Hollywood. And he'd have maybe 100, 150, 200 people there every Sunday. And I started going over to his meetings. Of course, I didn't catch on too much. Everybody was there. Reverend Butler used to be there almost every Sunday. And Dr. Burroughs, who passed away, was a veterinarian, used to be over there. He was a Swiss bodyguard.
Okay.
And it was sort of a central meeting place for patriots in the Los Angeles area. At that time, of course, at that time we had about 30 patriotic identity churches at that time. Now
okay.
And radio programs. Now there's nothing there.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, what do you think happened? Because it sounds like there was a boom period, at least in California, and to some extent east, as Pastor Emery had his organization in Phoenix. On the East Coast, we had some British Israel people, but I'm not aware of Christian Identity being active in the middle of the country during the 60s.
Well, we're talking about Los Angeles.
Yes.
Los Angeles, Gerald L.K. Smith, Reverend Gerald L.K. Smith, who I don't know if you're familiar with or these people today, he was first, I believe, in Detroit because Henry Ford was there, and he had his organization after he was run out of the state by the people that took over from Huey Long.
Okay.
He was Huey Long's right-hand man and made all the speeches for him around the state when Huey was in Washington.
Oh, interesting.
And when Huey was assassinated by the Jew by the name of Weiss, the federal government came in and started bribing everybody and telling them they were going to be prosecuted for income tax evasion and everything. And there was a Jew and some Jews in the organization of Huey Long.
Right.
And they put pressure on Smith and practically drove him out of the state.
Okay.
Smith had preached the eulogy for Huey Long. They had 100,000 people out in New Orleans to hear him speak.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they've completely cut him off from any circulation. And of course, then he tried to go to Detroit, and he had problems there. And then he tried to go to St. Louis, was his last place. And then patriotic movement was very strong in the 50s, early 40s,
right.
Late 40s, and early 50s.
Yes, exactly.
I think around 1950 or 52 somewhere in there, Smith took a poll, basically did a survey,
mm-hmm.
and found out the most patriotic area in the whole United States was Los Angeles County.
Interesting.
And then he moved his organization, the Christian Nationalist Crusade, out there.
I see.
And started in there, but he used to have huge meetings downtown, 2,000-3,000 people, about two or three times a year, and he has office over in Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, people would get in touch with Swift, Swift was he was his bodyguard at one time.
Oh, okay.
His bodyguard, and he used to drive with him. Swift used to always carry a gun with him and everything.
Right. Right.
And
let's back up a minute here, back to Detroit. Now, Actually, let's back all the way up to the Huey Long period. Now, Gerald L.K. Smith, you say, was Huey Long's speechwriter?
No, he was a speech maker.
Speech maker.
I don't know. Yeah, he probably wrote speeches for him as well.
Okay.
In other words, Huey Long was actually probably running for president before he was assassinated.
Yeah, against FDR.
Yeah, he was going to go against FDR,
mm-hmm.
and he had to be out of the state a lot.
Right.
So Smith was a preacher from Shreveport originally. He was from Wisconsin and Shreveport.
Okay.
At a large church in Shreveport, and somehow him and Long got together. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
And Smith was by H.L. Mencken says Smith was the best orator in America.
Right.
So he would go around while Huey Long was in Washington. Smith would go around in all the little towns all over Louisiana and speak to the poor people.
Campaigning for Huey Long.
Huey Long all the time. They never stopped.
I see.
But when Long was assassinated,
yes.
Like I said, the organization just crumbled. Smith came down here and they had 5 million people on their mailing list at that time on these metal plates.
Well, this is a very fascinating part of American history that very few people know much about, namely the conflict between Huey Long and FDR.
Right.
I personally believe that FDR had Huey Long assassinated.
Well, a Jew by the name of Weiss did it.
Yeah.
And they say it was over the race issue because Long threatened to expose Weiss's father-in-law, who was a judge down here, as being part black.
Yeah.
And so that was the supposedly reason that Weiss shot him.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess a lot of Jews are part black.
Well, they are, but not where you can... We'll pick them out of the woodpile and identify them.
Right. Okay. All right, so Gerald L.K. Smith was intimately involved with Huey Long. Now, and then he had to move to Detroit. Was he involved at all with Henry Ford?
Well, he knew Henry Ford. I think Henry Ford gave him money under the table.
Okay.
And also, I think he gave him cars.
Okay. Right.
But there's very little proof of that. We know he gave money because Smith had mentioned that several times.
Well, but Henry Ford had his publication called the Dearborn Independence.
Right.
Which was publishing news about international Jewry and how the Jews were ruining America. Was Gerald L.K. Smith writing articles for that publication?
No, Gerald L.K. Smith, after he left Louisiana, he was helping Long, before Long was assassinated, run the Share the Wealth organization here.
Uh-huh.
And they worked with Dr. Townsend, who used to be for a large pension for people that were retired.
Okay.
And the three of them worked together, and Father Coughlin also was on the stage with Smith a number of times.
Oh, wow.
They spoke together. In fact, 25,000 in Cleveland one time.
And Father Coughlin,
he was a great patriot, and they shared the podium several times, and Dr. Townsend was a big part of it.
Yeah,
he was an old gentleman. He was probably about 80 years old when he started working with him.
Coughlin had a very popular radio show, and he raked FDR over to Coles constantly.
Well, they estimate he had 30 million people listening to him on Sunday. The streets were emptied around, and he was another speaker, of course, but like I say, Smith, when they had to share the wealth organization here in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and when Long was assassinated, Smith went down to New Orleans to get the plates for the Share the Wealth organization. They had 5 million names of people that had contributed or wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got down to the office of Huey Long's office there, the Jews have already mailed the plates down, so he couldn't get them.
Wow.
The mailing list was lost.
Yeah.
Completely lost.
Yeah. So this is how the Jews operate. They assassinate people. And then they try to destroy the organization by preventing us from communicating.
Right. In other words, they cut him off from his supporters.
Yes.
So he actually, they would put pressure on him, threatened to kill him and various things. So he finally ended up going up in the Midwest and the North.
Yes.
Like I say, the place he ended up was Los Angeles, which was the biggest patriotic area in the country for many years.
And so Gerald L.K. Smith and Dr. Wesley Swift were then intimately connected.
Before Swift really got going at the women's club and speaking, he had a pyramid club and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also, for a while, Swift was Smith's bodyguard.
Yeah, okay. All right. So the two are very intimately connected. And I do have some of the sermons of Gerald L.K. Smith. And he is just as much a Christian identity as Dr. Swift was.
Yes, he was.
Okay. Now, tell us about, before we're 15 minutes into the show, why don't you give people the contact information, because you have a website and you have a publication that you put out so people can get on your mailing list, etc.
Well, the contact site is under New Christian CrusadeChurch.com.
Okay.
And that's for the church.
Okay.
And for the CDL, we have CDLReport.com. And it's easier to get in touch with us that way as well as writing.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a post office box at P.O. Box 9166, Mandeville, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. If anybody writes, we'll send them a packet of material, newspapers and books and various other things. We have a bunch of Swift's booklets that we'll send them and get them started if they're just getting into this.
Yes. Now, what's the difference between the Christian Defense League, which is the CDL, and the New Christian Crusade Church?
Well, the New Christian Crusade Church is mainly involved with just the identity, religion.
Okay.
And the religious
Christian
end of
identity.
It. And
all right.
We try to stick to that as much as possible in the newspaper and stuff. And the CDL was formed because there are a lot of people out there that are not identity,
mm-hmm.
and as well as identity people, and they want to participate, and I don't want to say, okay, now you can't participate because you also believe like we don't do on the Jews.
Right.
So basically it leaves the door open for people to come in and be with us.
Okay.
That might not otherwise, okay, say, well, we're going to work with you.
Yeah. So Christian Defense League is more for Christian patriots who can be identity or not.
Right.
Yes.
You don't have to, but the church is identity.
Okay. No. But the New Christian Crusade Church is Christian identity.
Right.
All right. Now, in your latest mailing, the one I have here is dated August 2006, you were making an offer I'm just glancing through it here, a reprint of the Gospel of St. John according to Dr. Wesley Swift.
Right.
What's that all about, and can you give us a little bit of Dr. Wesley Swift's insight on the Gospel of John?
Well, basically, as our former editor, Reverend Thomas O'Brien, passed away in 1983, he did a lot of studying on the Bible and the mistranslations.
Oh, okay.
And he found 24,000 mistranslations
okay.
in the New Testament alone.
All right.
And, you know, you get people, at one time there was almost just Jews translating.
Right.
And they just changed it the way they wanted it. In fact, especially the Old Testament.
Yes.
They put a lot of things in there that weren't supposed to be there and put their views in it. But I think out of 12 or 14 people translating the Old Testament, 10 or 11 of them were Jews.
Right.
So you know they're going to put their propaganda in there and change the wording.
That's right.
So what I did is I used to go to Dr. Swift's meetings and we started publishing his booklets after he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to just get the word out on this thing, and
okay.
Dr. Swift, we've reproduced on cassette tapes, which have been distributed widely now by other people, over 400 and some sermons by Dr. Swift, and of course there had to be a lot of work done. Reverend O'Brien did most of it before he passed away,
mm-hmm.
and the I felt that the people had to know. What the Gospel of St. John is the most inciting
mm-hmm.
of the four Gospels.
Okay,
four original Gospels. And the reason that people don't understand most of it is because they interpose things one ahead of the other. And listening to Swift and reading his material over these years, I finally decided that there had to be something done to straighten this out so people could sit down and read this thing in a logical way that makes sense.
Right.
Because all through the New Testament, like I said, the Jews were translating, and they changed the wording around,
right.
And then people that were ignorant put the words in the wrong places. If you read the Gospel of St. John according to the teachings of Dr. Swift that we have, you can. It's all the way it should be. I mean, you can read, I am above, you are from below,
mm-hmm.
and everything is marked out, and I have little comments and brackets to show you where the information comes from to prove my point.
Yes.
And right. basically, if you anybody that gets an identity has that, I urge them to get not one copy, but two copies. And take one copy and take a marking pen
mm-hmm.
and go through it and just check it against the originals and stuff and see
right.
where... at one point in which Dr. Swift and Reverend Gale put out, is there's one place where it says, I know you are Abraham's children.
Mm-hmm.
But you go up a few sentences either before or after that, and he says you're children of the devil.
Right.
So basically, what Swift used to put in there is, I know ye say ye are.
Right.
Not that ye are, you know?
Exactly.
And that was left out of the translations.
Yes.
And so that's what people need.
Way more sense.
Yes. There's a lot of things that seem in the New Testament, even the New Testament, that seem contradictory to each other.
That's right.
But have you ever seen the Gospel of St. John? Have you read it?
No, I haven't. It piqued my interest. Yes.
Please, I'll send you a couple copies. Mark it up and use it. Because it's the basic of everything there. We know what we believe, where you come from, where you're going, and he tells the Jews that you can't come from. They said, well, we're going to go where you're at. He says, well, you were never in heaven, so you couldn't come here anyway.
Right.
I mean, and I have that all in there, and I have under bold and stuff so people can understand. It's the basic people that everything that you need to understand the New Testament and the Old Testament is in St. John.
Right.
He was the one that really fought the Khazars, really fought the Jews, and he's the one that was the fighter.
Right.
And if you go, if most of your other Gospels are just repeating history.
Yes.
But St. John has it all.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
It's got the politics of the situation.
Oh, he's got the whole thing laid out.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But you have to understand it, and if you're looking at your regular Bibles, they're not even now even taking the word Jew out of a lot of this stuff and changing the words.
Right.
So I mean, basically. Like I said, this is a book for beginners, not only for beginners, but our people to study. But I hope that everybody that's getting into identity gets a copy of this thing, for the simple fact that they can. I'll send them too if they want. You know, just get in there and mark it up, and then you will really understand what's happening.
Yes.
And I put the Adamites where it should be in the book, and where the Adamites, and I put it in there where it's supposed to be. And when he's talking to people who are not Adamites, I put that in there.
Right.
I don't take anything out, but I put the right wording.
Yes, yes.
According to Dr. Swift, and I've heard him many, many years.
Yes, right. Now, I know that in the CDL report, which I've been receiving actually for many, many years, the one of your main feature writers there is, what's his name, the guy who was the lawyer for...
Yes, I was trying to get through on the phone here.
Yeah. the guy who was... Edgar Steele.
Yeah, Edgar Steele, right.
Yeah, and what's the connection between Edgar Steele and, I guess it wasn't Dr. Wesley Swift, but his other bodyguard, Pastor Butler.
Steele, this is where, this is my knowledge of this,
okay?
I may be incorrect somewhere.
All right.
But as far as I know, Steele took on Butler's case when he was being persecuted by the Jews up in Idaho.
Right.
Okay. Evidently, when Steele came into this thing, he didn't understand what was going on to the full degree that he does now.
Right.
And he didn't understand identity, which he still doesn't really understand
too much of. No, he's not an identity.
He's not identity, right.
Sure.
But he has his own views, and he's on the right track.
Yeah.
Okay, but I don't think he really knew the power of the Jews and what they were doing to Butler when he got involved.
Right.
But after he was beaten in court, basically, and Butler lost everything, these Jews started calling up and attacking him and his family, threatening to kill them and run them out of town and burn their house down and everything else. And he found from first-time experience that what Butler was saying was true, but it was too late. The case was over.
Right, right. Yeah, so he wasn't prepared.
He wasn't prepared, but then he became prepared. He's doing a wonderful job.
Yes, and now he's a spokesman for the white race against the Jews.
Yes, he is. He's got the gift of being a lawyer. He's got the gift of gab, really.
Right.
And I have to say that in a nice way.
Yeah.
Because he can not only do you read his stuff and it's hard hitting, but it gives you a little levity, a little hope, a little chuckle here and there. You know, he's really got the gift.
Yeah, excellent.
As a writer.
Well, there was one of the more recent issues that I've been dealing with is the Boers in South Africa have issued a statement that they want to reestablish their independent homeland,
right?
Which was basically stolen from them by the Jews,
right? It was
in the 1890s. And then
1901, there was a war there. 1989, 1901.
Can you tell our listeners about that era, because I know you published an article that detailed how the Jews got into South Africa in order to get at the diamond mines. and gold, etc.
Well, the Boers came to South Africa about the same time as the Zulus.
Okay.
It was the same time period they both came there.
All right.
And when the British, they came in, so was Cape Colony. But, you know, one of the problems we're having in the world, not only with because our people don't understand their identity,
mm-hmm.
is, but we have a problem because of the British being run by the Jews over the centuries. Like
right.
I have in the new issue coming out, the British have been the worst enemy. The British, not the British people,
yes.
but the British government has
yes.
always worked with the Jews from Queen Victoria on.
Right.
And they went into China. I have it in the paper now. They went into China and undermined us there. They went in with the missionaries and brought opium in from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And they doped up the Chinese people. And I know during the, I don't know if you were very active during this time, but during the Vietnam War, the Chinese came out plainly and said that you drugged up our country at one time, and now we're going to get even with your boys, and we're going to get them on drugs.
Yes.
And that's exactly what they did. There's so many people in this country. Young people, not young people, but they're now about 50 or so.
Right.
That became drug addicts because the Chinese were getting even with us for what
right.
the British did to them.
Yeah, exactly.
We never did anything to them. British did.
Yeah. Well,
and that's what this in the 18, I believe it was 1850s, is the Empress of China wanted to stop the drugs from coming to China and start a battle in not only the British but four or five other countries from the West, including.
Yeah.
Japan,
mm-hmm.
joining them and knocking down the Chinese people. So that's where the problem's coming from today.
Right.
And they're justifiably right.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the Boxer Rebellion was China's reaction to all
against British imperialism,
yeah,
against
exactly.
against the British stealing everything from them.
Yeah, and I know the Bush family was even involved in that. The
Prescott, the Bushes, yeah.
Yeah, Prescott Bush was a descendant of the Prescotts. And the Prescotts were directly involved in selling drugs to the Chinese.
Oh, yeah, that was, and believe me, that it was these so-called Christian missionaries who shouldn't be preaching to non-whites.
Yes.
Who were doing the dirty work. They were bringing chests full of opium from by boat from India into China, going through Afghanistan to India to China,
uh-huh.
and doping up the Chinese people.
Right, right. So the Chinese, we've been oppressing the Chinese for quite some time.
Yes, we have, and they're getting even right now.
Yes.
There's going to be an eventual confrontation with these people,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be a worldwide conflict, but you're not going to be
right.
able to stop them because they're growing so fast.
Yeah. God only knows what the Chinese government is telling the Chinese people about us, but probably most of it's true.
Well, I'm saying it is true because we're the ones that did these people in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's payback time, and we don't have any like the Jews
right.
used the East India Company and the British to get even with everybody in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have anybody backing us up now. We're alone.
Yes. It's us and Britain right now. I don't think we have any other allies except that so-called terrorist state of Israel,
right.
who's the country that's getting us into all these troubles.
Right.
Yeah. So. Now China is a very interesting case because America, thanks to the Rothschilds and the communists and the Roosevelt administration, were instrumental in subverting Chiang Kai-shek. Are you familiar with that era?
Yes.
Yeah.
He had Two Gun Cohen was his right hand man over there.
Who?
Two Gun Cohen, was one of his bodyguards and brought the arms in for him. Chiang Kai-shek was a bad actor as well.
Okay. Yeah, but. I understand that the reality of the situation was that the U.S. State Department and other communists, you know, in our government, were propping up the who's the Chinese, Mao Zedong,
right,
against Chiang Kai-shek secretly, while publicly we were supposedly supporting Chiang Kai-shek.
Well, the thing was that Chiang Kai-shek was corrupt as it was.
Well, yeah.
His wife was a Song, who was one of the Chinese Jewish banking families.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. But, it is a fact. It's something, I don't know if you've ever published any articles about that, but it is a fact that the U.S. State Department and many aspects of our military machine actually supported the communist Chinese against Chiang Kai-shek toward the end of World War II. so as to turn China over to the communists.
Well, you had to divide the country up. We knew it was going to be a major force in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had to divide the country up like we've done to everybody else.
Yeah.
The thing is, we divided Korea and Vietnam.
Likewise.
Right. Well, we should be staying out of everybody's business, and we haven't, and so now we're reaping the whirlwind.
Yes.
And that's the big problem for us, because we're just little guys. We don't run any governments.
Right. And so this is what I'd like to tell the listeners, that your newspaper or your monthly magazine, I guess is the best way to describe it, talks about these aspects of history, some of them are quite unbelievable aspects of history that you'll never read about in your daily news.
No, I think I'm between me and Mullins, I think we're the last two people left in the patriotic movement, maybe Cardo a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that really understand the whole history of this thing back from the 20s.
Right.
And on. And everybody that I've known that had any information on this or studied these people or knew these people is dead.
Yes.
And I think, like I say, Mullins is one of the oldest and most informed people in the United States on the whole patriotic movement, because he knew all these people that were arrested for sedition in World War II and everything,
right,
and locked up by the Jews. And he also knew George Sylvester Varick and, you know, everybody that was anybody.
Right. Well, Ezra Pound, I know that...
Ezra Pound, yeah. He fought to get Ezra Pound out of jail.
Okay.
Out of the insane asylum. See, they wouldn't try Ezra Pound, because most of your poets, even though they were not patriotic, they were on the socialist side.
Right, most of them were left-wing.
They were still poets, and they still recognized Ezra Pound's genius.
Yes.
And so they also defended him, even though they disagreed with his so-called fascist viewpoints.
Right.
So Pound, if they gave Pound a trial, it would have caused a big ruckus all across the country with all the people in literary circles.
Right.
Now, not because they liked him or agreed with his views, but because he was being persecuted.
That's right.
So that's why they kept him in insane asylum, so he couldn't speak out. They did the same thing with Knut Hamsun in Norway.
Okay.
He was the Pulitzer Prize winner, I think, from way back in 1920s. He wrote a bunch of poetry and stuff there, and he was the greatest literary source in Norway, and he backed Quisling.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the war, and they didn't put him in jail, they put him in a nut house.
Right.
And shut him up. He's 87 years old at the time.
Yeah, it's quite amazing how these famous people of the time were simply put away by the Roosevelt administration and other Jewish contrived governments throughout Europe. It's quite amazing. Our people have access, and that would include Charles Lindbergh, because before World War II, Charles Lindbergh Jr. And the America First Committee were publicly stating that America should stay out of the war, and the war was being promoted by international Jews.
Well, that's what brought him down. When he made a speech in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. they brought up the fact that the Jews and the British were behind the warmongers.
That's right.
And that's when he had his downfall. Everybody deserted the America First Committee. Not everybody, but
mm-hmm.
I mean maybe 20% of their members deserted because they were afraid of the word Jew.
Right. But yeah, a lot of people aren't familiar with that episode in history, that Charles Lindbergh, who flew the Spirit of St. Louis, that Charles Lindbergh publicly stated that the Jews are behind World War II and America should stay out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he was very vocal about that, and his father was also very vocal against the Federal Reserve.
That's
Lindbergh,
right.
Lindbergh Sr.
Yes. Yeah.
He knew that was a bunch of crooks going in there, but then, of course, they were after J.P. Morgan to get him to destroy him as well.
Right. What's your take on that? Because obviously J.P. Morgan was instrumental in setting up the Federal Reserve System.
No, he wasn't. He was totally against it.
J.P. Morgan was against it?
Totally against the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
He was for private banking. He did not want to. He fought a centralized bank in this country.
Okay.
That's what people don't realize.
Really? Well, now, wasn't the meeting for the formation of the Federal Reserve System held at his estate on Jekyll Island?
Well, everybody went down to Jekyll Island that was rich. I mean, they had a thing called the Trust.
Okay.
And that was Charles Schwab and everybody else, not the one that's on the stock market today, but probably one of his relatives. And they had like 100 or so top businessmen of big major corporations in the United States, almost all non-Jews.
Right.
That used to meet down there. So that was a meeting place. I mean,
uh-huh.
Jekyll Island has no specific meaning is in that area.
I see.
In other words, the object of it was the people behind persecuted. J.P. Morgan was called to Washington by a thing called the Pujo Committee by a little-known man, a congressman from Louisiana.
Right.
In about, I think, 1912 or 19 before the Federal Reserve was up. So he was called there, and he was persecuted by this committee for months on end, questioning him about his business connections with all the other non-Jews in the country,
okay,
and what money they had,
yes,
and how they were connected. And guess who was the guy that was leading the leading counsel for the Pujo Committee?
Untermyer?
Yes, it was.
Oh, wow.
He was the rolling force. He was also one of the forces between destroying Henry Ford.
Yes.
He was in the middle of that.
So, yeah, because Untermyer was the Rothschild attorney here in
America.
He was
the Jacob Schiff attorney.
Yes.
He was the leadership of Jacob Schiff's forces.
So J.P. Morgan was being interrogated by Untermyer.
Yes, he was, for
okay,
months at a time.
Yes. All right. So, because just about every history I've read on that era links J.P. Morgan with Rothschild. You're saying the exact opposite.
No, he was absolutely against Rothschild. He really hated Schiff.
I can imagine.
And he dealt with a couple of firms because they did carry bond issues.
Okay.
And he, at times, he didn't have all the money he needed or wasn't
right,
able to get the bond issues through. So he did deal with, I think, Kuhn-Loeb at one time or another.
Yes.
Or one of the other ones. I don't think it was Kuhn-Loeb because that's Schiff, but
yes,
one of the other groups, Lehman's, I think.
Okay.
But
yeah,
they were small players, but when he needed money, he went where he could get it.
Yes, right.
And that's the...
Well, yeah, I mean, just about everybody in the world has borrowed money from Jews at one point or another.
To see that Schiff was involved with this whole thing, they wanted to destroy Morgan because Morgan, when the Schiff wanted to destroy Russia...
Yes.
Schiff was in the 1905 here. He's the one that supplied the Japanese against the Russians,
right,
with loans, low-priced loans. Well, when they were over here, the Schiff put the word out that nobody was to loan the Russians money.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to bankrupt the Tsar because he was anti-Jewish.
That's right.
So what happened is they had a meeting up in New York, in one of the places in New York, on Morgan's boat up there, and Morgan got a hold of the ambassador from Russia, who had a Jewish wife, of course.
Okay.
And Witte, and he told Witte, he said, I will loan Russia as much as $350 million at low rates if you agree not to deal with Jacob Schiff or the Jews in the United States.
Right.
And that
yes,
was J.P. Morgan. So anybody that says any different is lying or they don't know the history.
Yes, very fascinating. Well, that brings me to my next question, which, because J.P. Morgan suddenly died.
Back to the Pujo Committee.
Yeah.
He didn't die too long after. They had, he was an old man up there then.
Okay.
And they just grew him for months at a time and he just collapsed.
Right.
He went on a vacation and died.
Well, do you suspect foul play? Because it's obvious to me that...
Well, I can't prove that, you see.
Okay.
But I know the situation that he was, from the reports I've got, the documents and books, that he was completely broken by that committee.
Mm-hmm. Well, broken financially or...
No, broken mentally.
Okay.
In other words, it was just a harassment by Untermyer.
Right, right.
And Untermyer was, one of the ship people from early
uh-huh.
times. And
well,
then, right after that, because of this committee... What this committee was set up to do,
yes,
the Pujo Committee, was to make J.P. Morgan and the Barings and other people that were non-Jewish bankers look like they were such big crooks that they were swindling American people and they had to have a central bank
right.
and an income tax.
Yes.
And the Jews claimed, oh, these guys are so rich, they're swindling all the American people and there's a lot of poverty in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we need
robber barons.
Yeah, we need to break up the trust, which was Morgan's
yes.
group.
Yeah.
We need to break up the trust because there are all non-Jews in it.
Right.
And that, the United States deal was involved in everything.
Right.
And they all of a sudden, all these Jews became populist.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to serve the American people and help out and do all this
right.
stuff.
But let us lend you money.
Yeah, and once they destroyed Morgan and his forces, then the Federal Reserve came in, and then the income tax.
Yes.
So you see, it was just them being so-called being populist so they could destroy the non-Jews that had money in the country.
Right. Okay, so in other words, what you're saying is that these rich Jews, Rothschild, Kuhn Loeb, Untermeyer...
Schiff especially until he died, right?
Yes, yeah. Were posturing as saviors of the country and...
Heroes of the working people.
Yeah. Singling out rich non-Jews to try to, you know, to minimize their, either destroy them or minimize their influence.
That's exactly what they did. That's what the Peugeot Committee did.
Interesting.
And that was Untermeyer. And Untermeyer was one of the worst people that ever was in this country.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, Untermeyer was instrumental in setting up the Schofield Bible.
he's involved in every rotten thing going on against the white people.
Yeah, there isn't a single rotten thing that he didn't have his fingers in.
Oh, he was into everything. And then, like I say, he went on, he's the one that declared war against Germany after Hitler came to power and put out that book, Germany's whatever, I can't remember the name of it right now.
Right.
And he was in the middle of all the conspiracy in this country.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And like I say, he was very deeply involved with Schiff. Him and Schiff worked hand in glove.
Yes, yes.
Schiff was the worst Jew probably this country ever had.
Yeah, well, it's debatable whether, you know, you got Untermeyer, Schiff, and then you got, who was FDR's advisor? What was his name?
Rosenfeld.
Well,
he had a lot of advisors. There's a whole list of them that were Jewish. But,
right.
Bernard Baruch was the
Bernard
big one.
Baruch.
And then you had the other one, Felix Frankfurter, and they worked together.
Yes.
And I have a thing on this. I'm going to do some.
Yes.
I'm doing some writing on this about Schiff and Baruch and Frankfurter. I mean, Frankfurter came from Austria, and all of a sudden he's an advisor to four presidents.
Right.
And he can't even speak English.
And he became a Supreme Court justice.
Yes, he couldn't even speak hardly
English. He was an American citizen.
And then Baruch was the same way. Baruch was from this country, of course, but Frankfurter, this guy comes from Austria, and all of a sudden he's advising four presidents.
Right. Yeah. Amazing.
He was the most powerful man in the United States.
Yeah. Well, the Jews don't have any influence in our government at all, do they?
Not at all. Yeah, right. Yeah, they're being persecuted all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. They're so persecuted they own everything.
Right.
Well, now why is it? How is it possible? Because we're talking about American history that everybody should know. How is it possible that the American people know absolutely nothing about these people who were so instrumental in steering America into these two world wars, into Korea, into Vietnam, etc.? How is it possible that our nation is so uninformed?
Well, because they've taken over the educational system right from the very beginning in this country. I mean this whole thing on the look at your universities and all your universities in the country, they're all linked together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if one university speaks out like they did before that when they had the segregation thing. Bob Jones even got racked for that. I mean, and he's as bad as he is.
Yeah.
And they cut off your ability to change credits from one university to the next, and people to honor your degrees.
Okay.
And they got the educational system here, but the thing of it is, how can you educate people if you don't have any culture and history? Basically, the people, white people in this country, have been rootless.
Clueless.
Clueless and rootless.
Clueless
because
and rootless.
They don't know anything about the history, their background, or anything else.
Yeah.
And they're not taught anything in the schools, and so they come out. The ones that come out that have any brains are very lucky.
Okay, I have a message from Dan Kay. He asks, how do these Jews always weasel their way into high positions?
Well, they stick together.
Yeah,
they have the power like they did when the Jew Frank killed a little girl up in Atlanta. They had Jews from 40 different states up there representing millionaires, trying to get Senator Governor Tom Watson to pardon the Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's a lot of power.
That's right.
And they tried to, and he just told them to get lost. At least he had a lot of guts.
Yeah.
Since I was senator, and he was governor and senator.
Yeah.
Tom Watson.
Right.
Very but he didn't put up with them. He just told him to get out of his office.
Yeah, yeah. So, Tom Watson and Huey Long, obviously Huey Long was also...
Well, Tom Watson was a long time before Huey Long. I think Tom Watson died in about 1924, 25, before Huey Long was that
okay.
well known.
But a similar situation where you have a patriotic governor or senator, you know, a member of a state government... fighting against the Jews.
Well, the Jews came down, came to Atlanta and tried to get the people, that the Jew Frank off from the murder of Mary Fagan.
Right.
And at that time, Tom Watson, Senator Tom Watson, put out a newspaper. I can't remember the name right now. But when they were thinking of pardoning this Jew and letting him go, you know, putting him in prison for life.
Right.
And the headline on Watson's paper, which reached 100,000 people in the state, said, "Hang the Libertine Jew."
Yes.
On the front of it. This is the governor.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is a lot of power at that time.
Yes, yeah. We don't have any patriots like that in any state office today.
There's nobody like that. We don't have one person in state office or local office to do anything.
Yeah. So in your estimation now, because obviously our presidency has been compromised by the neocons, is there any hope of our government being snatched away from these people who've taken over our country?
Well, I think what's going to happen is everything's going to come tumbling down. I see this thing around the world. I mean, it's unfortunate. There's more and more people from non Anglo-Saxon countries
mm-hmm.
that are speaking out, and I think that this is a good sign.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to bring the Jewish power down. I can't see every time. I'm watching this guy, Chavez. He was over to, went to Belarusia, okay?
Right.
He made a military pact with the guys. If they're attacked, if Venezuela is attacked, they're going to fight, they're going to help Venezuela.
Right.
I mean, he's made a pact with Iran. They made a pact with North Korea. And, I mean, the whole world except the people in the United States are waking up to what's going on.
That's right. That's right.
This country, these people in a deep sleep like Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what it's going to take to get them out of it.
Yeah. Our people are in a deep coma.
They are very much.
Very
I doubt
where
they're going to get out of it. But if they don't, we're getting everybody in the world hates us so much that we're going to be in for a bad time for the people that are of our group.
Yeah. Now wait a minute. Now the Jews say that they claim that they're the object of the blessing given to Abraham in the book of Genesis. You know that. And they say, well, if we bless the Jews, that God will bless us. Are you saying that's not true?
No, it's not true. They've usurped everything.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing right now. But I'm telling you, we're seeing more people from other parts of the world that are standing up to them, and not the people that should be standing up to them, which are our people.
Yes, yeah.
And that's a shame because that our people are so ignorant, but the Bible says we perish for lack of knowledge, doesn't it?
Right. Well, as I recall, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, the last poll that actually asked the question whether or not we should be supporting Israel only had about 50% support. And I would think that the reality is that, you know, today, and that poll was probably taken 5 or 6 years ago, that today support for the state of Israel in America, you know, among voters, got to be a lot less.
Well, it's, among the voters it's a lot less, but among the politicians, I mean, they did a resolution for Israel not too long ago, and 99 senators voted for Israel.
Wow.
A resolution supporting Israel in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I think that's held out is Harry Byrd.
Okay, yeah.
And then he's the last holdout in Congress that'll ever stand up and say anything.
That's right.
Of course, he's 100 years old.
Yeah,
But I mean, he's the only one.
Yeah. A lame duck, so to speak.
Yeah, well, he certainly ain't going to get any younger, and he's not going to stay in power too much longer.
That's right.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Fascinating. So, you know, our politicians have been totally compromised by the Jewish mafia.
That's right.
Yes, yes. So what's upcoming in your next issue?
Well, I got a lot of different things. We go by with the myriad material that comes in here. People send us a lot of material now on the internet and
mm-hmm.
and the write articles. Jim Taylor, I don't know what he's going to write for the next one.
Okay.
But we just go as we go along and do
right,
the things.
Right. Have you done an expose on 9/11 in any of your?
No, I think that's pretty well covered by everybody else.
Okay. So you.
We try not to touch on subjects which everybody else is promoting. And I think the people that are doing the job on it with these movies and videos and stuff
right, yeah.
and radio shows are doing a wonderful job.
Right, yeah.
I can't criticize them at all. And really, I'm not an expert in that. I try to stick with what I know.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And I know history, and I know the background, the identity movement. I know our history of our people and everything like that. And so I stick with those things.
Right.
I mean, there's too much happening and too many conspiracies going on for me to become involved with every one of them and do any good.
Right, right, yeah. So you're in the tradition of the Charles Coughlins and the Henry Ford.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All my heroes are from the 20s and 30s
yeah.
and 40s.
So it's great to be in touch with that tradition because, quite frankly, James Warner, the struggle by numerous Americans and prominent Americans against the Jewish mafia is a blacklisted or a whitewashed era of our history. Tell us a little bit about Charles Coughlin.
Well, Coughlin, they have different ways to pronounce it. He was Irish, of course. That's why he was so much against the British.
Right.
Because he was.
Oh, okay.
They settled in Canada, but his people originally came from Ireland.
Yes.
Which, if you notice, at that time in history, most of your Catholic priests were Irish around. A lot
yes.
of them.
Yeah.
And they all fought it with England because it was their enemy.
Yes.
So that's why you had such a great great patriotic force in the Catholic Church at that time, which you don't have now.
Yeah. My question is, you know, how did Coughlin, as a Catholic priest,
yeah.
get around? It seems to me that the Catholic hierarchy would be disapproving of what Coughlin.
Well,
was
at that time, you had a number of bishops who were patriots.
Okay.
They knew about the Jews. In fact,
Catholic patriots.
They were patriotic. They were very patriotic. They were.
All right.
And they knew about the Jews, and he had several that used to support his newspaper. Including the bishop from Detroit.
Okay.
That's what got him off the radio is because the bishop from Detroit, I can't remember their names. There were two bishops up there. There was one bishop that used to actually go on his program
uh-huh.
and support him. So he had the support of the top Catholic guy in Michigan
right.
behind
mm-hmm.
him.
Yeah.
Okay. When this guy all of a sudden dropped dead about 1939. Another bishop came in that was against him.
Wow.
And that's when he started having problems with the Vatican. They were trying to bring him down from
uh-huh.
the Vatican.
Okay. Yeah, because my thoughts were that he would definitely have problems with the Vatican.
No, as long as he had that bishop there,
mm-hmm.
he was in good shape.
Interesting.
The thing that people don't ever think of is, you know, he had probably about 20 or 30 Catholic bishops that were supporting him
yes.
around the country. The bishop in Indianapolis was one of his
man.
People.
That's unheard of today.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, from what I understand in the Catholic Church, if you have three bishops,
yes.
you can ordain somebody a bishop yourself, the three people, without going, and then it goes through the Vatican.
Oh, interesting.
And that's what I can't understand, this bishop that was supporting him, and there were several at the time,
mm-hmm.
They should have made him a bishop.
That's right.
And that would have stopped the Vatican attack on him.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Because they couldn't have got him out. See, once you're in there, he can't get you out, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Excuse me, but you have a comment?
Okay.
Gary from San Diego.
All right.
Hi, guys. It appears that Congressman Trafficant?
Trafficant? Yes.
Did not support the Jews.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Trafficant was put away for... He criticized the State of Israel.
Well, he was a great man. He was a great man.
Yeah, he's a still
and, they had to shut him up, you know, he was very popular in Ohio, from what I understand.
Right.
I met him personally about 20 years ago.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
I had lunch with him up in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, he supported John Demjanjuk.
He also supported David Duke at one time.
Yeah,
I don't like to mention, but
John Demjanjuk was falsely accused of being a Nazi... And blah, 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 he was dragged over to the State of
Israel. Oh, yeah, he supported him. Trafficant was great. And you see, Trafficant, from what I understand, you know, I've been talking with people, is when Trafficant got so popular and won in his district, he, at one time, he didn't hardly have to campaign.
Right.
Is because, from what I understand, he was sheriff up there one time.
Okay.
And they were closing down the steel mills and the mines and stuff.
Right.
And people, the government was repossessing their homes.
Mm.
Well, Trafficant was sheriff. And Trafficant refused to serve papers on people to take their homes from them.
Right.
And he became very popular. For many years, he didn't have to put any money into campaigns except a few $1,000s.
Yeah.
He was very popular.
People don't realize the sheriff has the power to tell
the
government to take a hike.
He wouldn't serve people with eviction notices.
Put
them out of their homes.
Wow, what a patriot.
That's why they got rid of him. Let me tell you, he was right on every issue.
Yes. Oh, I can imagine, yeah. We have another question, and we have about 5 minutes left. And you know, I don't know
okay.
if you're pressed for time.
No, go ahead. I'm, I'm,
We have a question here from Dan. Dan K. Speaking of the Mafia, is it true that the Mafia was originally started by Jews?
No. The Mafia was started by Sicilians.
Okay.
And Italians.
Okay.
Okay, first Sicilians, then Italians.
All right.
When they took over, there was a time in, I think, the 1930s.
Okay.
When Bugsy Siegel and them got in with Lucky Luciano.
Right.
Lucky Luciano was part Jewish, by the way.
Okay. All right.
And they considered him a Sicilian.
Sure.
So that the Valentine's Day party, remember they had 1920 something
right,
or 30?
Yeah, right, Chicago, yeah.
That's when they bumped off all the real Sicilian leaders of the Mafia and the Jews took over. And Bugsy Siegel and the rest of the Jews came into the Mafia. That's when they started taking it over.
Right.
They weren't in there before because these old Sicilians hated them.
Right. I can imagine.
But of course, they didn't know Luciano was part Jewish either, so.
Right. Right.
So he knifed him in the back and killed all the real Italians off.
But in New York City, however, I'd say in New York City, there had to be a Jewish presence before then, because
not in the Mafia. They may be they had their own kahila or something. They are Jewish.
Well,
Mafia.
But not with the
Italian group. No.
Right. But the Jews had their own racketeering operations going on. In New York City.
Well, that's what they call the kahila. That's the whole Jewish operation. They have their own courts and everything else.
Right. And so what you're saying is that the kahila finally took over the Mafia.
Well, no. In other words, these Jewish gangsters used Luciano
mm-hmm.
to bump off all the real Mafia leaders
okay.
that were Italians
right.
and Sicilians.
Right.
And then they took over.
Okay.
They ran these guys off.
Right. Right. Yeah, because Murder Incorporated, which was founded September 11th, 1931, exactly 70 years before 9/11, was founded by two Jews and a Sicilian.
Yeah, well, they were infiltrated a long time before this. But that's the St. Valentine's Day massacre in the 20s, I think it was, or
right.
1930, was when they really knocked off the leaders of the Mafia.
I see.
They got in there.
And then they took it over. And I know a lot of these mobsters had Jewish accountants and Jewish lawyers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a movie out with all people, Charles Bronson in it,
mm-hmm.
which was, of course, he was a Russian Jew.
Uh-huh.
But the thing of it is, there's a thing that people might want to get it at the video store
there's
if they can.
There's a reason why I don't like this guy.
And it's called The Stone Killers.
Okay.
It was made in the 70s.
All right.
And it goes into a plot by an old Mafia member that escaped
uh-huh.
to bump off the Jews running the Mafia.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's a movie that most people don't know about. But
right.
you can get it. This guy, in the supposedly the Mafia leader in the movie, says we're getting even for the Jews bumping us off and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah, well, there's always this bad blood between the Jews in this group and the Jews in that group and
right.
the Jews in another group.
Right.
You know, and you never hear about it because it's always covered up.
Right.
Yeah. So now, how did the Jews take over? You know, because you mentioned them taking over the educational system.
Right.
How did the Jews take over the press?
Well, they basically have always controlled the press in this country, even when they got from the times of Peter Stuyvesant almost on.
Okay.
The East India Company came here and stopped him from kicking the Jews out of New York.
Right.
But they just termites. They get into break the unions like this Newhouse.
Okay.
The way he took over newspapers is he found newspapers that were having a problem surviving.
Yes.
And then broke the unions there.
I see.
That's how he did his job.
Yeah.
I mean, they stick together.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they stick together, and mm-hmm. we don't.
Yes.
I mean, Hearst had a big fight with this in the 1950s. With these Jews running Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
when 40s and 50s,
right.
because he was against World War II.
Okay.
Well, they all started attacking him and trying to destroy him, but he beat him. But he never worked with Henry Ford or anybody. Our people don't work together. That's the problem.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
We don't stick together. We're not a conspiracy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
for sure.
Unfortunately,
hey, wait a minute. Hillary said that there's this vast right-wing conspiracy.
Well, I'd like to find it. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe she can give us some tips on where to look.
Yeah.
For
it's you and me.
Yeah. Right. Where can we look for these guys? You know.
Yeah.
I wish I could find them.
Right. Yeah. Let's put our hundreds of dollars that we have.
Yeah, put it together, maybe we can buy some stamps and mail out some more letters. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. vast right-wing conspiracy. Can you believe that that woman may be our next president?
Well, that's why they arrested all these people in World War II. I've done a big study of that, too. I knew some of them were involved in the sedition case.
Right.
And believe me, these people most of them didn't even know each other. They would get newsletters back and forth.
Right.
And they were locked up. I don't know why, but they got them from Washington, D.C. under some federal law, and I don't know what it is, why they tried them for sedition, because all of them were connected to writing and sending free material to somebody in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
That was a spy.
Yes.
But they were all only because they were in contact with Washington, D.C. That's why they were arrested.
Yeah.
And I don't know the reasons.
Washington, D.C. is actually a sovereign city. See? And so they have different laws for Washington, D.C. So people, it goes back to the 14th Amendment. A lot of American people don't realize that.
Like I say, somebody needs to, I'm going to probably have Mullins on that,
mm-hmm.
but somebody really needs to do a look into that and find out how
Mullins,
they got them.
Mullins would know that, yeah, I'm sure
he would. Probably would know it, right?
Yeah.
I'd have to ask him that when I talk to him again,
but
that's what they did. I mean, you'll find out, if you study the undercover by the Jew Duronian, who attacked all these people that are involved in this thing,
mm-hmm.
you'll find out that the whole connection was through their sending patriotic material basically free to people in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there has to be some...
And they connected them all together. Senator Langer put out a report, which I lost in the flood down here, which talked about the nonsense of talking about these people having battleships and airplanes and everything, and forming a conspiracy to take over the country, which is nonsense.
Right, yeah. So, now...
all these little guys had nothing, really.
Right, yeah. Well, it was FDR and his people that set up... aren't they the ones that set up the prosecution of?
Oh yeah,
the
that's
real
what
picture.
I wanted to get these people out of sight and out of mind.
Yeah.
And Rogue, who was Telford Taylor and Rogue, who were some of the prosecutors.
Yes.
These guys ended up defending communists after World War II.
That's right.
They were big revs.
That's right.
I mean, there was no big difference. I mean,
yeah.
These guys were out doing free legal work for the Communist Party.
That's right.
And these are the guys that were worried about Nazis taking over the government.
Yeah, yeah. And today we have, you know, and it just reminds me, it's so ridiculous that during that era, because I remember growing up in the 50s and watching the McCarthy hearings on television, and all these communists coming up in front of the cameras and, you know, pleading the Fifth Amendment, and, you know, the press is on the side of these communists.
Of course they were. We can go into that again sometime, because I know the whole history of this thing. In other words, if World War II didn't come along, there wouldn't have the Hollywood would have been completely exposed, because the United States Congress was exposing war propaganda at the time the war took place.
Right.
At the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and these Jews were going to get it because they were totally involved with attacking a foreign country they weren't at war with.
And all these spies that McCarthy was exposing, virtually all of them were Jews.
Well, he had two people on his staff that made sure he did the right thing, and that was Shine and Cohen.
Yeah.
He had
Roy
two
Cohen.
Jews as assistants.
And Roy Cohen became a mob lawyer.
In fact, they pushed Bobby Kennedy out of it. Bobby Kennedy wanted to be the...
Really?
He'd be the big assistant to McCarthy,
okay.
And the Jews aced him out.
Now, wasn't McCarthy aware that, you know, that these guys are probably plants?
Well, I think he also knew that if he exposed communism without having Jews working for them, that he'd be attacked as an anti-Semite, and they'd destroy his base.
So you think he did it for that reason?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, they didn't call him an anti-Semite that I'm aware of. Maybe
he never did openly attack them, but he did stand up against war crimes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He did do that about Malady and all.
Yeah, but the thing, you know, and this is why it's so important to know the history of America, comparing those times to today, because what we have going on today with the so-called Holocaust being criticized by revisionists, why isn't the press defending the freedom of speech of these revisionists?
Well, because the revisionists are telling the truth about a people that don't want to be told the truth about.
Yeah, that's right.
And so they're covering
that's
up for
it. Right.
Them.
You know, what's going on here, folks? In the 50s, the press was defending communists who were preaching the violent overthrow of America. And the same institution, the mass media, refuses to support people who want to have freedom of speech, namely the revisionists.
I'll tell you that. When we get into it next time we talk again, I'm going to go into some of that stuff. We'll go into the background of all the why the right wing collapsed after the 60s and various things like that.
Yeah.
Why this movement, because I've been through all this stuff, and And I've seen it happen. I've seen the people involved.
You lived through it.
And, I lived through it, and basically I'll tell the people exactly how this country collapsed. The patriotic movement used to be so strong that there were grocery stores that would make you take communist food produced in communist countries off the shelves.
Wow.
And anybody that was communist, their goods were kicked out of the stores.
Right.
The big chains.
Yes.
But this is, that's the whole story to go into, but I mean, I can tell the whole deal.
Well, we'll definitely have to, do that on the next show. So, for today, since we're past the hour, why don't you give us your contact information, and before you say anything, let me just plug your magazine, the CDL Report.
Right.
Which always has excellent historical articles of verboten history.
Well, that book Verboten is a good one, too,
You'll never read about it anywhere else except the CDL Report, so please give us your contact information again.
All right, we're at P.O. Box 9166, Mandeville, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. And you can also get material from us by going to you can get on my email address markov5@aol.com, and we'll send you material if you just send us your name and address.
Okay, and then the website address again.
The website is New Christian Crusade Church, just as it sounds.
.com. Okay.
And you get to us there. We have over 200 sermons up by Swift and a bunch of other ministers that were really involved in this thing for many, many years. And we're putting video and streaming video and audio up there now, and anybody that wants to put something up there, contact us, and we'd be glad to put your stuff up there.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, Pastor James Warner, thank you for being our guest this evening, and bless your efforts, and may prosper your endeavors. Are you located in high ground now?
Yeah, we're in high ground now, so we're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
It can be wiped out.
And actually, we'll save it for next time, but I'd like your opinion as to what caused those dikes to fail.
In my opinion, they were blown up.
Yeah.
And other people's opinions, too, and not only the black people down there complaining about it.
So we'll get into that next time. Thank you very much for being our guest.
All right, it's my pleasure, and it's good to be on.
And we'll definitely have to talk more history.
Well, let's get more into the patriotic movement from the 30s, 40s, and 50s and stuff.
We can
about everything.
We'll make that the subject for our next talk.
Okay. Right,
thank you very much. Okay, y'all bless. Okay, great interview today with Pastor James Warner of the Christian Defense League and the New Christian Crusade Church, another old-time organization that identity people need to be aware of and need to support. Okay, so in terms of today's program, I just want to make one more announcement that I will be here Thursday at the same time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, with the Voice of Christian Israel. And this Sunday, my guest will be John W. Gerhardt of the Libra Defense Organization, which is a group that defends white prisoners and in support of their rights as prisoners in our prison system. We'll be talking with John W. Gerhardt this Sunday. So please tune in on those two occasions. This is Pastor Eli James signing off. God bless, everybody.